We will talk about a summer project that we did last year in, with my colleagues, Courtney Shepard, a first-year medical student at the time, and two pediatric residents, Kelly Wright and Catherine Wallery. So I'm their voice today. And I will give you the perspective as a primary care physician, since I used to do that for a while, and now a pediatric hospitalist, so I'm on the other side of the fence right now. We know that vaccination of children at increased risk for complication from influenza infection actually still remains a public health concern in the United States. The reason being that hospitalization rates for children under 2 years of age are extremely high. And then children between 2 and 5 years of age has really increased rates of clinic visits, emergency department visits, and this, as you can imagine, raises healthcare costs and also takes a token on the family and the health of the child. Children identify as being at high risk for influenza complications due to their underlying chronic medical conditions that we will abbreviate as CMC from now on, have indeed higher influenza-related morbidity than healthy children. In fact, the rates of hospitalization are very close to those of children and infants below 6 months of age, which can be as high as 250 to 500 per 100,000 children. And that represents about 12 to 20 times the rate for healthy children 2 to 5 years of age. So a big problem. This table here is to just give you a flavor of in the influenza season of 2003-04, which if you remember, it was an early season and very high, sort of peak in November, so we were not prepared at all. And there were about 93 deaths that year, of which 38% were from children with chronic medical conditions. This table gives you just a flavor how many, the wide array of diseases that fall within that category, so that for primary care physicians, this is a challenge, and hospitalists as well, to actually remember all the conditions that place you at a higher risk for influenza. Easier said than done, so they're often overlooked. And I circle one of the categories that the ACIP has recognized as being at higher risk, which is this group of neuromuscular, neurological diseases, which are so important, and you can see also takes a toll on children's health. So screening for influenza pneumococcal immunization status in these children is extremely important. If we do not do screening, there is no way we're going to recognize that they need the timely vaccination, since up to this point, we were doing risk-based immunizations, and that I'm gladly to hear since yesterday that that will change to an universal approach. As of now, they had to pay attention to age, those between 6 months and 2 years, 5 years, and now those from 5 years and on, it was a problem of lack of screening or recognition of the children. So really identifying where we have these missed opportunities will help us design better ways to have the children access what they need. The objective of the study was to assess the influenza and pneumococcal immunization status screening, were we actually truly screening the children, and if so, were we vaccinating, acting upon it, in that age group between 6 months and less than 18 years of age, with the chronic medical conditions of the long list that the ACIP has for us for the past influenza season of 2006-07. And also to review the prevalence of provider missed opportunities for these two vaccinations in the high-risk children. We look at the six-month interval between October 06 and March 07, which is the flu season for mid-Missouri or the Midwest. A case was any pediatric patient in those ages that we have talked about with the chronic medical condition. How do we identify these cases? Well, we did computer-assisted searches of the billing and registration databases with the list of predefined chronic medical conditions. So it was indeed a retrospective cohort study through the University of Missouri healthcare system. If you are familiar with Columbia, Missouri, that sits in the middle of the state of Missouri, 2 hours from Kansas City and 1.5 hours from St. Louis, covering about 25 counties and over 700,000 population. So we assess if the children were screened and then vaccinated through the billing database and the electronic medical record, which is the only document that actually is accessible to all providers at all times. We also provided patient surveys in the subspecialty clinics where these children with chronic medical conditions are seen, in like the diabetes clinic, the CF clinic, and asthma clinic, etc. That would be great. Thank you. Regarding the demographics of the study patients, the mean age was 9 years plus or minus 5 years, so older children. In fact, two-thirds of the children with these chronic medical conditions were above 5 years of age. That has implications because children past infancy actually just have yearly well-child visits, so access to regular health care doesn't happen that often, which that's a barrier for this immunization, and their birthday may not fall in those 6 months of flu season. They were predominantly Caucasian, as expected in this region of the country, and surprisingly enough, the 58% had private insurance, which was a little bit shocking for us, since most of our little kids under 2 years of age are Medicaid. One-third was live in the urban area. So we studied 2,185 high-risk children with 2,352 chronic medical conditions, as many of them had one, more than one chronic medical condition. You can see a great percentage, 45% had asthma, followed by diabetes mellitus type 1, and then this category of neurological and neuromuscular diseases, followed by other conditions. 7% had more than one chronic medical condition. Failure to actually screen for this immunization status of influenza and pneumococcal in these high-risk children occur in more than half of the clinic's visits for the influenza vaccine and more than two-thirds for pneumococcal. All patients have more than one opportunity for immunization status screening and vaccination, as they all had encountered some sort of healthcare visit. 6% emergency room visits, 10% were hospitalized, and 84% visited their main subspecialty care provider. Missed opportunities for screening and thus vaccinating these children occur at 3 visits for every vaccine given to children with asthma and at 5 visits for every vaccine given overall. So you can see the children did show up to healthcare. Out of the vaccine eligible patients, we were about 2,000. What made them vaccine eligible? That they didn't have true egg allergy or allergy to any component of the vaccines that we study. That they didn't have high fevers at the time of the visit, or that they were not seriously ill. 33% received influenza vaccine, which slightly better than national average. If you take all children overall, usually children between 2 and 5 years, the rate is less than 20%, and those between 6 months and 2 years, it's up to a little bit closer to 30%. The majority were asthmatic, 71%, followed by diabetics. And for pneumococcal vaccination, things look grimmer. 13% received the Prevnar, and 3% the 23-valent. And remember, the majority of the children, by the time they had the chronic medical condition, were over 2 years of age, so that they were eligible for the 23-valent. 91% of the influenza vaccine trivalent was given to outpatients in the clinic, 9% to inpatients, and none through the emergency department. The bulk of the 23-valent pneumococcal vaccine, 69%, was given at the time of the influenza vaccination, so that was fairly good, since in adult studies have demonstrated that sometimes we do fail often to immunize against pneumococcal at the time of influenza vaccination. But more than half or half of the pneumococcal vaccine actually was given to inpatients. 21% of the patients had their primary care provider at this system, health system, and the 75% had the subspecialty care provider, as we are the only tertiary children hospital in mid-Missouri. So this was as expected. Regarding the surveys, no surprises here either. As with many other studies, the home caregivers of unimmunized or underprotected children reported lack of physician recommendation as the main reason for not vaccinating their child against influenza. And that was followed by the fact also that the families did not consider that the children had indeed a chronic medical condition, even though they were going to the asthma clinic and the diabetes clinic and the cerebral palsy clinic. So education was faulty there. In this graph, I'm showing you the percentage of vaccines after screening and vaccinating these children by clinical category of chronic medical condition. You can see that, and I ran them so it will be easy for you to interpret, the pulmonary group is the one that did best with 48%, followed by hematologic group, which includes sickle cell disease. If you go to the EM category, that's the endocrine metabolic, those are the diabetics, and that was only 15%. If we look at both influenza and pneumococcal, you can see that the asthmatics reach the highest percentage, 47%, which is better than national average. But we have an asthma educator who is fabulous, and the credit of this that rate is all due to his educational efforts. But you can see for pneumococcal, for these high-risk children, numbers don't look too promising. When do we do this? Well, we achieved 80% of the influenza vaccine in the first 3 months of our influenza season, where we kept going through March. And this is what happened in the Midwest, and that 2006-07 flu season, where the peak was about mid-February. So it was really important to actually get them vaccinated in the first 2 months, so that they would be ready to face this. Limitation of the study, well, that is retrospective in nature. Incomplete data on the medical records does happen, so we can have underestimations of the true immunization screening and or vaccination, which we try to catch through the billing data. Relatively lower Medicaid population than expected, so we might not be able to generalize certain findings. And then that Missouri has an immunization registry called Mosaic. That is great. However, it is sometimes incomplete, and there is no free access or easy access for the primary care provider at point of care. So again, the need for some central database, national immunization registry, is so important if we're going to really be able to screen during the point of care visit. The conclusions, well, the prevalence of missed opportunities for these two vaccinations that these high-risk children with chronic medical conditions need was, in fact, quite high. The asthmatics rates were better than national average, which ranges between 21 and 33%, and we reach 47%. There is no doubt that we need systems in place, so they are not necessarily people-dependent. They are immunization champions in every place, but not everybody is, and that takes education and sustaining the educational efforts. So at the same time, a system in place, there is no doubt, will help. Also, having accessible electronic vaccine documentation so that this is easy to screen at the point of care. We all want to do this, but actually the system is quite difficult to make it happen unless you are totally vested in believing in immunizations. Another thing that we identified as a need is that, amazingly enough, most of these subspecialists were almost unaware that their disease that they were treating their children, their patients, qualified as a high-risk condition for influenza pneumococcal vaccination. So we had to do a lot of education in that regard, and they are learning little by little. So one thing would be, how do we have really better access to these long lists of conditions, but we made it accessible at the primary care level where actually these children are seen, and at the subspecialty level. Of course, these providers need to adopt this in practice and become really advocates of this problem. If you ask a subspecialty provider, they will tell you that they are not in charge of giving vaccines. That's the primary care provider's job. And we encounter this over and over. And if you remember the age group of these children, they were much older. So they do not have well-child visits every 2 months. It's just once a year. When you have a chronic condition, these children tend to go to the subspecialty care provider more often than to the primary care provider, and they view their subspecialty care provider as the PCP. So the subspecialist thinks that it's somebody else's job, they don't go to the other person, so the end result does not happen. And to educate the subspecialist that they can play a significant role in disease prevention, It's a major challenge, but worth the fight. So what we did is trying, for me to help my pediatric residents to learn this concept that a child with a chronic medical condition is a higher risk and what qualifies for a high-risk condition. I'm sure you won't be able to read that from there, but what I did is put in this slide the front and the back of a pocket card that is the same size as the CDC immunization vaccination cards. So they carry it all in their pocket, and where the memory fails, I say, where is your chronic medical condition card? Look at it. And they find it. And by repetition and repetition and repetition and easy access, they are starting to recognize this, where when we hospitalize children, they will say, Dr. Mato, we need to give a pneumococcal vaccine because this kid is over 2 years old, got only one Prevnar, and has X disease. So it works, and this is the back of the chart. Since the pneumococcal aspect with a 7-valent and a 23-valent can be challenging if you don't do this over and over. So the bottom line, somehow we really have to increase provider awareness and work in their attitudes, but also on the parental awareness. They just don't even understand that their kid has a chronic medical condition, let alone that that places them at certain extra risk and thus the extra protection. Access needs to be easier, and the universal influenza vaccination strategy instead of the risk-based approach there's clearly will help a great deal if we are able to implement it. This will take one barrier away, not thinking about if this child has the risk, but you're a child, therefore you get the vaccine. That will be easier. And then also we probably have to think about innovative ways. I train in developing worlds, of course. I always wonder how come we don't do national immunization days in the fall and try to capture more people. Sure, it's more complicated. In the developing world, you don't need a consent form. You just need everybody line up and happy to get vaccinated. So there are many challenges here. But if we have to vaccinate so many people, school is a great approach, but also we might need to think outside the box and learn from the developing world about national immunization days. So I would like to thank all my colleagues at the University of Missouri Healthcare Children's Hospital who helped me with this project. The pediatrics and specialty clinic nursing staff and clerical staff without whom this is not possible. An educator that has my utmost respect, Ben Francisco, who actually made his asthma rates look so good. And the only reason they're not better is because Ben Francisco is not in charge of every asthmatic patient in Mid-Missouri. Otherwise, they would be better. So I just would like to close with Hippocrates' quote, that healing is a matter of time, but it is sometimes also a matter of opportunity, and we should truly work hard at trying to decrease the missed opportunities. Thank you.